This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
Welcome back onto this edition of the Kona Edge. It is the last day of October 2018 as we record this. Man, can you believe it? Less than 2 months to go until Christmas, which is just mind-boggling. It seems like yesterday we were talking about Christmas last year. And what's even more mind-boggling, at the beginning of this year, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you'll know that I set the goal to pretty much go full-time working on the podcast, but also to hit 1 million downloads this year. And as it stands now, 2 months to go in the year, and we smashed the goal about a month and a half ago. We're sitting on 1.2 million downloads already for the year, which is just, that's mind-bending for me. So thank you. It's all because of you. I get to talk into a microphone in my little studio in Cape Town, and people from around the world get to listen. So it's just amazing what technology can do, and I love being connected to the triathlon community globally. And yeah, I get to share stories like I get to share today, which I'm pretty excited about. Blake Kapler joining us today as we talk a little bit about his Ironman journey, and I think it's a slightly different take today that we normally do, and I think you're going to enjoy it. Pleasure to welcome onto the podcast today, all the way from Perth in Western Australia, Blake Kapler. Blake, welcome onto the podcast. Thanks for joining me today.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me on.
Blake, Western Australia, Perth, it's the home of Busso, one of the most famous, it's just north of Perth, I think, in Busselton, one of the most famous Ironmans on the calendar. It's known to be fast and flat. It's nice having an Ironman fairly close to where you're based.
Yeah, I guess it does make a good impression with people and tempt people to come down there because of its because it does, it is very, often produces PBs down there, and the swim, the jetty swim is just iconic worldwide. You know, it's an amazing thing to tick off the list.
Absolutely. Blake, let's talk a little bit about you from a personal point of view and your sort of backstory. Tell me a little bit about your sort of sporting pedigree. What sort of stuff were you into growing up as a youngster?
As a youngster, I played quite a high level of AFL football, and sort of golf at the same time. Played a high level of golf as well. And then I got to about 16 and sort of come to a T junction, and it was sort of golf or football, and I chose golf. Went down the golf path, and it became quite expensive. It's an expensive habit, hobby to try and make it in, and I guess I just ended up on the tools. I ended up in the construction game.
I'm having a quiet chuckle to myself. You're saying you gave up golf because it came quite expensive, and then a few years down the line, you found triathlon.
Yeah, don't worry. This conversation has arisen many a time. I have been asked why I put the time and effort into triathlon when what could have happened if I'd put the same amount of effort into golf. But quite often I come up with the same answer. I have so much passion for this sport in triathlon, which is, I think, the key to doing well at anything. And I just lost the passion for golf. So triathlon it is. I love it. I love it every. I love going training every day.
Blake, the three sports that you've mentioned, Aussie rules, AFL, golf and triathlon, all three quite different. From a fitness perspective, you've got to be super fit to play AFL. It's very physical. Yeah. So there's that sort of side of it. Golf, yeah. you need to be fit, but, we've seen some of the professional golfers on the circuit. They might not be the most healthy and physically fit specimens around, but triathlon's a totally different beast, and particularly the long stuff, the Ironman. What is it that attracted you to the endurance stuff?
Well, at first it was, I didn't play AFL level football. I played a high level of, local, our state sort of level football. But after golf and football, I stopped and was in the construction game for probably 15 years or plus, where I barely touched any sort of endurance or sporting whatsoever. The occasional golf, but casual game once I stopped playing competitively. So I guess the tradesman lifestyle of pies and chopped milks sort of bit me in the ass, and I became, I tended to head down the path of being a fair bit overweight. I was weighing in just under 100 kilos, drinking a lot. I was drinking, as a tradie, you tend to finish work, knock off and have beers most days. So once I sort of, I came to a conclusion that I needed a bit of a change of a lifestyle, and a few mates were doing a triathlon, so I joined them. I joined in with them for doing a sprint distance.
Once the bug had bit after that, what was it, a case of, this is awesome, I'm going to keep doing this, or did you ease your way into it?
I think it was full throttle from there on. I dove straight into a half Ironman, I had done a full before the end of my first 12 months. And it's just, I guess that's my personality. Take everything head on and do everything to the fullest. And there's nothing that I'll do sort of half-assed. So I went head first into it all. And as I got further into it, I got more and more addicted to the sport. The endurance sport is so addictive.
What makes it addictive? I mean, we always joke about it, but I mean, there is definitely, yeah. What is it?
I don't know. I like seeing where you can, what the limits of the body are. Like from me being nearly 100 kilos to now, I race at say 62, 63 kilos. It's like I've lost over 30% of my body weight. So to see what the body is capable of is, it blows my mind, you know. And so every day sort of training and that, and then racing and trying to find the limits of the body, sort of gets me hook, line and sinker.
I mean, that's amazing from a weight loss perspective. I mean, just to put that into a bit of perspective in pounds, we've got a pretty big American audience as well. So, I mean, you started out, yep, at 100 kgs, which is about 220 pounds. You race at 60-odd, yep, which is, just doing the maths, about 130-140-odd pounds. I mean, you've lost...
100,
yeah. You've lost, yep, 60 pounds, 30-odd kgs. That's a Backstreet Boy, mate. That's incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, I lost that in the first, I'd say, 12 to 18 months as well. I got down to, say, I was 70 kilos, yeah, within the first 12 months. Just my, I guess my personality of doing things full on, and as I got further into the sport and was getting more into the technical details, finding out how to go faster, weight loss was a key. So sort of to lighten up the body and get that sort of, you can change the watts per kilo without actually increasing your power. So dropping weight was the thing that I sort of concentrated on at the same time. And it sort of falls off with Ironman training, I'd say, as well.
Absolutely. Blake, as far as sort of getting into the sport and going full tilt, are you one of those guys that looks for help, or do you kind of do your own thing and sort of figure it out as you go?
At the start, I mean, I was just in the shop weekly buying whatever magazines were out, reading up as much as I can. I do like to stay at the top of anything that I'm doing, like find out what the best and the finer details of everything. But I didn't actually, probably took me 8 months until I looked into getting my first coach, and I didn't understand how to taper into my first 70.3. So he helped me out with that for 3 or 4 weeks. And then, putting my first coach in place was a big step forward. Like anyone who's starting out in the sport, I can't recommend starting with a coach before you buy a $10,000 bike or you buy all this expensive equipment. A coach to help you in the right direction and also purchase the right products is gold.
You make such an important point there, Blake, that people often, the sport's expensive to get into and to maintain. Let's call a spade here. Yep. But people often sort, yep, of dollar and cents it, where they think, oh, I need to buy a bike and I need to buy a tri gear, so I'm going to skimp on the coaching and try and figure it out myself. But oftentimes, as much as having a really nice bike is going to be good and it'll help your performance, if you rather invest in a coach up front and improve your performance, yep, down the line you can always go and, yep, spend $10,000 on a bike, but you're going to get massive, massive gains by sorting out your training in the, yep, short term.
It's not only physical gains and training smart that a good coach can provide. It's a lot more than that. Like, quite often they would have trialed and errored with different pieces of equipment and training gear and stuff like that. So through my coaching business, I also try and save people of making the mistakes that I've already made. And then they only have to spend money one time, you know, like the difference between a P5X being $20,000 and the top of the range P3, which you could probably get for about $5,000, to the top, even a top age grouper is not going to make a huge difference, you know, like what they did in the 6 months leading up into the race is going to be the most important.
Absolutely. Blake, as far as getting the balance right, you mentioned coming from a tradie background. You worked in construction. Yep. How did, yep. I know you've transitioned a lot away from that, and that's the long-term plan, but how do you get the balance right? I mean, we talk about this being an addiction. It's not the cheapest of addictions. How do you get the balance right of keeping the balls in the air at work, but still training enough and having the time to train and keep everything else going, personal life-wise, and keep all the balls in the air?
Yeah, so I've got, because I started in the sport very, very late compared to a lot of people, obviously had a bit of a lifestyle set up and bills and stuff, and I have a wife and two young children, which will always be my priority over any racing. But I guess it keeps me sane at time, you know, like I believe that it provides a huge part of mental health for males, you know, like it keeps you positive. You're in a better mindset to actually go and do your job or go and play and work with your kids. I think there's a lot more benefits than just like the physical benefits out of training. Mentally, to be fresh after everything else you attack in life, you can adapt it everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you also mentioned that you find it's a great sort of metaphor for success in other areas of your life, and yep. Triathlon and Ironman teach you sort of how to deal with things. What are some of the outside benefits that you've got from the sport that you think is just have been life-changing for you?
I guess I think I said it to someone the other day. I guess being in the tradie construction and making good money doing that, it's sort of almost you switch off a lot of your learning skills and that, because you have a set of skills to lay concrete and send an invoice, and that's how you make money. So all your other tools end up not as sharp as they should be. So coming back into the sport, I learned punctuality even through like a group ride. Like if you're not on time to the group ride, the group leaves. So you learn to be on time or you're riding by yourself. Even response to emails, time, meetings, discipline during a training session can be adapted into so many different areas of your whole life. So through my coaching business, I try and provide so much more than just a Monday to Sunday program. I try and show them how they can adapt the skills that they use in there to everyday life, to being more positive and better at their job, to being more positive at home. There's a lot you can get out of it.
Blake, and that's so important, isn't it? I mean, we see it often, and I speak about it so often here on the podcast, that we see people come into the sport and they come out all guns blazing and they're training 25, 30 hours a week, but something's got to give. And then they disappear 2 years later, you don't see them again. It's important when you come into the sport, as much as it's hard work, let's be honest, it's doing an Ironman is not easy, but you have to maintain balance as difficult as it is. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it seems impossible, but it is vital.
Yeah, you definitely need your family and close friends around you to like keep it in check. Like when you start taking things serious, like my last 3 years getting ready for the Hawaii Ironman, it consumes you, and every detail of every day you want to get right for that race. But you've got to remember that you've got a life to live as well, and there's so much more going on around. Which I learned a huge lesson in my first preparation for Kona. I done everything you possibly could to eating out of measuring cups and every cross the T's and dot the I's. And 10 days out, I had another cyclist clip my back wheel and crash me and sort of hinder my performance in Kona. Out of that, I learned that you've got to enjoy everything else around it because there's so much you can't control.
Blake, let's talk about taking it seriously and setting goals like going to Kona. When did Kona first get onto your radar? Was it early on, or was it, I mean, tell me how you first started thinking and having aspirations of racing on the Big Island.
So the Big Island, to me, I sort of, it was definitely like I knew about it in my first Ironman. And it wasn't my first Ironman. Obviously, a lot of the time is completing it, but my personality, like straight away, like on the radar was maybe punching that ticket. I didn't have a great race and I punched. I then re-entered for Ironman Melbourne a few months later after Busso and didn't have a great, the ideal race there either. And, was left a little bit disappointed, but hungry to get to Kona. What really sealed the deal was that the year before I did my first Kona, I flew over and watched it. I watched the race. And being on the island and feeling the vibe and watching what the athletes go through, especially two of my close training mates that were there, that was it. That was done, signed deal to me. I then left the island and my goal was to make sure that following year I was back on that start line.
I love that. And I mean, you talk about being sort of full on, and that first one that you go to, is it a case of just going there to be part of the experience, or do you go there chasing goals?
That really depends on the person and the personality. Like, I guess I do hear so many people say, "Oh yeah, I'm just doing it. Like, I just want to cross the finish line." But at the end of the day, I think then you're putting there straight away, someone's putting a block in front of themselves. So one of the first hurdles you need to help them get past is themselves. Putting that block in front of you of saying that you just want to finish is going to hinder your performance straight away, because if that's what you're thinking all the way leading in. I like to see people hungry and putting expectations out of their reach and then helping them get it.
What, you've been and raced in Kona multiple times. What's the secret? What does it take to qualify first up? But what's the secret to keep going back?
To keep going back? After my first two races, if you asked me within a couple of days, I didn't think I wanted to see the island again. But I guess I didn't want to see anything again. The island can be so cruel, like the amount of prep you've put in. I did a podcast earlier this week, and I just think so many elements of the Hawaii Ironman make it such a different race. That it just has, you have to have a whole newfound respect for it.
It and that makes it quite, and I think that's one of the things that makes it so special, but that's one of the things that makes it so tough. I mean, we all know an Ironman is a long day out, and to put, string together the perfect race is pretty difficult. There's always going to be one or two things after a race where you think, oh, maybe I could have done that better or done this differently. And Kona throws a whole new spanner in the works, because there are variables that you don't normally get to experience in other races around the world. How do you prepare yourself for that, knowing that this is going to be something way out there and totally different to what you've ever done?
I guess after my first race there, I learned a lot about the island and what you have to deal with. So, like, I put things in place, like a few weeks training in Indonesia in the heat and humidity beforehand. You then understand a bit of the terrain that you're going to deal with and the winds, so you put other things in place, like, so that you can familiarize yourself, we do a lot of sessions at home with the laundry and the dryer on, getting humidity up or in a heated room and stuff like that. I think it's important to get a taste of what you've got, and then you can go away and do a lot better preparation after you understand what you're in for.
Blake, you are, I could just hear it, you're passionate about the sport and this is it. You're going to be around for a long, long time. What is it that you still want to achieve in the sport of triathlon and particularly in Ironman?
I mean, everyone's going to say get to that start line as a professional is at the top of my list. you know, like I want to make that start one now. I've raced there three times. I've had two average races, one not so, like I was pretty, I put together a good race with the cards I was dealt with in the last year. I knew I was turning professional after that, but I had no intentions of that being my last time on the island. So the next year, couple of years is definitely going towards getting back to that island and ticking that bucket list, racing as a professional. But I also feel that I have a lot more to give back to the sport, as in I would love to help a lot of these athletes, you know, through everything that I've learned over the past 5 or 6 years. I feel I have so much to offer so many of these athletes that sort of don't want to get a coach and want to buy the expensive bike like we talked about earlier, like pass on my knowledge, you know. I am truly passionate about the sport and I love every aspect of it, and I get as much out of coaching and helping others through the sport as I do racing.
Blake, racing as an age group and racing as a pro it's two very different kettle of fish. And we've spoken to, we focus predominantly on age groupers, but we've spoken to a lot of age groupers who have made that transition. And some have done it way more successfully than others. I mean, one of the first people we spoke to on this podcast was Lucy Charles. She had just won her age group, her first visit to Kona, and we've seen what she's done in the pro ranks. But it is difficult. Yep. And I think a lot of age groupers think, man, I wonder what it would be like. For you, I mean, talk to me about the decision of deciding to go from age group ranks into the pro ranks.
So it was always on my radar. It was always something that I wanted to do. Like I've told you before, like my sort of obsessive personality, I always compared my time straight away to the top, you know. But that was one thing I learned. Once I took my professional license, it's not a matter of just the minutes between the top age groupers and the pro field. The intensity and the race is just a whole different kettle of fish. You know, like you can age group racing. Me personally, I think the swim is irrelevant. You've just got to get through it, and then it becomes down to a bike run race. I mean, there's a lot of problems with the sort of drafting in the age group things, and then you come across to pro ranks and your race can be decided in that swim. That's it. If you don't make the front two packs, the days can be over. You know, like if you get a strong field up ahead, the racing, one of the things I found was the gap was a lot bigger than I thought, and it was a hard lesson to learn.
It's funny. Everyone says that, Blake. Like it's, yeah. I mean, looking at pros racing, it looks, I mean, you can see they're fast, but I think it's only once you get in there and are in the mix that you realize, I mean, the top pros they're another beast.
The intensity is just through the roof, and it takes a different toll on the body to race at that intensity and actually race the race. And at times age group racing is a lot more calculated. In pro racing, like, you've got to go with the race. Like, the race makes a move, you've got to go or you'll be out. You know, like, it can be decided there if you don't go with whoever is moving through. And then sometimes you'll look at some of these fast age groupers up the front and they'll be doing sort of, I don't know, I've seen, like, the high threes, 350 to 4 hour sort of time. And then you see the pros and they're sort of only, like, maybe 10 minutes to 15 minutes behind, but the gap is time-wise, like the racing, doesn't show a relevancy of the gap. The gap's so much bigger racing at that higher intensity.
And when you blow up as a pro, it's a totally different explosion to when you blow up as an age group, I'm sure.
Yeah, it is. I mean, as a professional, the fields are like, I mean, you get 20 pros at Ironman thing, and you know that all the age groupers that are coming up, the top fast ones, are trying to race against you, and no one can understand what's going on. Like, I even in Cairns, I had to pull out due to health reasons, and sometimes you've got to weigh up what's more important, and what you've got as a professional. You're looking at what you've got ahead of you as well. I mean, if you go to the well in an Ironman, then that can necessarily affect the next 6 months of your season, and you may have other things planned. So it influences your decision a lot, and changed my mind about when I have watched other professionals pull out, and I didn't think it was great for the sport. But once you get put on that side of the fence and you understand that the decisions are not based around just finishing, it's you're trying to make a living, it becomes a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, I think you make a great point there, and I think a lot of age groupers don't see that, a pro may pull out, but the reason they're pulling out is not because they're quitting on themselves or the race. It's self-preservation. That, I mean, if you realize you're off the pace 20 minutes or 30 minutes into an Ironman bike and you're not feeling great, it's pointless pushing through, knowing that you've built the base and you could possibly go and race another one in 2 or 3 weeks' time because you've done the work. So, I think it's a good point that a lot of age groupers miss.
Yeah, I also think from the other point as well, there's definitely another side to that. I do think that if you start pulling the pin on races regularly, You lose your racing edge. It becomes almost too easy to do that. So I think you've got to be really careful when to finish, when to push through, or if you can manipulate the rest of the race into a solid training session that's going to benefit down the track. You've got to weigh up all your options, and you're trying to make these decisions during a race.
Blake, that's so interesting that you bring that up, because I've run quite a few ultra marathons in my life, and we've had this conversation so much in the running space, and I don't think it gets spoken about often enough in the triathlon space, particularly around Ironman, where it's a case of, and like you say, once you've pulled the pin the first time, it becomes easier to pull the pin the second time and the third time and the fourth time, and you don't want to get into that habit. I mean, yes, you don't want to push yourself through that you end up breaking and doing serious damage to your body. But from a mental perspective, you've got to guard that with your life, because once you start making those decisions, it's difficult to come back from that.
Yeah, and as you say, like part of ultra marathons and that you're talking about, one of the biggest parts other than your fitness is your mental. The mental side is huge. If you start putting dents in that armor by just going, oh, I'm just going to pull out, and then trying to justify it to yourself, you lose a racing edge that like you may not get back no matter how hard you train, you know. It's like, if you'd pulled the pins a few times and things are a little bit easy to pull the pin, and you come head to head with Lionel Sanders in the last 5Ks, you're going to get your ass kicked, because no one knows how to hurt like that guy on in the whole pro field, I don't think, you know. So you definitely have to be careful about when and where to do it. And you see even the top guys having to make that decision, i.e. Jan Frodeno last year in Kona, still finishing with his back, which I think he had his own reasons for doing that, but I think what he earned and the respect, like even the respect for me watching him finish, like it was a lot of character building for him.
The mental side of it, I'm fascinated by it, and we don't get to chat to it too often here on the podcast. You talk about the ability to suffer and push through. How do you train that as an athlete?
I think it can be the difference between being a good athlete and a great athlete. Learning to accept suffering is something that the body, pain is only what you think of it, you know. Like if you can learn to accept it, I think you can push the body to a lot further than what you think's possible. Like I see things like, I don't know if you've ever seen anything on David Goggins, an ex-Navy SEAL. The guy mentally does things that should not be capable of being done. So if you ever get a chance to go and have a look at some of the stuff that he's done, it shows you that anything that you believe is possible.
Sounds brilliant. I will definitely, yeah. I haven't heard of him. I will look him up, and I'll pop a couple of links in the show notes as well. It sounds.
He'll blow your mind. He's done some, you'll have to, we have listened to a couple of the 100-mile races that he done, and it will seriously blow your mind.
I'm too scared, Blake. I don't want to hear anything about about 100 miles in case I get sucked into something.
Don't blame me.
I love it. Blake, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about the individual disciplines. If people want to find out more about you and your coaching business and what you're up to, where can they get more info?
We've just launched the website, and it's www.bkperformance.net. We've got a fair bit going on there, like we keep it live updated with what I've got going on training wise and stuff, and also what's going on with my athletes and that, and the different types of packages we have to offer. We also have Facebook page, BK Performance, Instagram page, BK Performance Training, and then you can also follow me, Kepler84, or Blake Kepler on Facebook. I try to tie all the posts in with each other so that my journey is involved with my crew and athletes. Get on there and check it out.
Brilliant. Well, Blake, it's been great catching up. I look forward to talking about those individual disciplines, but we'll save that for next time.
All right. Thanks, mate.
Thank you very much to Blake Kepler. I hope you enjoyed it. We're going to be touching base with Blake again in 8 days as we talk about his Ironman swim. But I thoroughly enjoyed my chat with Blake, and I'm sure you did too. Don't forget as well, if you are looking for some help and guidance and assistance on your triathlon journey, we've pretty much got you covered. In the last month or so, we've built a pretty incredible platform that allows you to train with the help and guidance of our coaches. You get access to an incredible community of athletes from around the world, and I'd love for you to be a part of it. It's not one-on-one coaching, which I think is amazing. There's a lot of hand-holding. There's a lot of help. The programs are fantastic, but it is very, very affordable. Anyone can afford it, and as a loyal listener of the Kona Edge, we're giving you a 20% discount if you use the coupon code KONA at checkout. Go check it out. The website to get to is thekonaedge.com/coaching. The link is in the podcast player that you're listening to this as well. You can click straight through and definitely check it out. I think you're going to love it. That's thekonaedge.com/coaching.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.